Private art collector John Landau will be discussing the collection of Renaissance and 19th century painting and sculpture that he has assembled over many years. Using this private collection as an example, Landau, along with former Clark senior curator Richard Rand and art dealer Andrew Butterfield, will consider how collectors decide where to focus their attention, how changes in the art market have affected the practice of collecting, and other related topics. John Landau is an American music critic, manager, and record producer. He has managed Bruce Springsteen since 1977 and was a frequent contributor to Rolling Stone in the 1960s and 70s. The name of the event is Collecting, an afternoon with John Landau at the Clark in Williamstown, Massachusetts, this Saturday from 3 to 4:30. And it's a great pleasure to have John Landau with us this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, that just sounded like quite a mouthful there. So I got to get my thoughts even more together.
Well, first of all, how often do you talk about your collection in such a way?
This is the first time I've ever done an event of this kind. I've never, you know, sort of addressed the issue of the collection as a whole. I actually have had to think because I'd like to have something useful to say.
When you started this, and at what point did it become in your mind a collection, not just a one-time or two-time thing, but an actual collection?
Well, what happens is with collecting is that it is a self-perpetuating disease. So, you know, you're being consumed by it before you realize that. And then it just tends to feed on itself. Depending on your mental state, people have more and less control over it. You know, how big a piece of their life it takes up. I'm on the fanatical side, and I would say that obviously I see my collection every day, but I think about it every day. I always have something in mind that I'm looking for. It's a daily process. There are collectors who create an agenda for themselves. They want to put together a collection of Dutch still lifes or whatever it may be. When they have got that, then that's their collection. It's basically fixed. You know, that's one way to do it. And our collection, my wife and I, Barbara, is pretty dynamic. It's changed, and it's always changing. And I would say the display in our house, some significant change or another, almost monthly. It doesn't necessarily mean that we've added something, but constantly rehanging and trying different ideas, you know, which is one of the great things about collecting is you can think of how you want to show these great works. Museums are sort of confined pretty much to the sort of, if you're collecting in Western art, let's say, to sort of chronological and then the geographical. So, you know, Italian Renaissance painting, that gets shown together. You typically will not see a great Flemish painting next to a great Italian painting. Mm. And you certainly won't see a great Italian painting from that period in a museum setting next to a 19th century French painting. Worst of all, most museums, sculpture, which is really the thing I'm most passionate about these last 10 or so years, sculpture is separated from painting. So if you go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, there are great collections in all forms of Western painting, European painting, and sculpture. They're completely separated. Now, the reality is, time they were created, a great deal of it was intended to be experienced together in some sort of integrated way. you go into any great church in Florence, well, there's great paintings, but they're surrounded by great sculpture. The academic tradition sort of disengaged them from each other.
If the collection is, when you think about it, and in that placement and not giving it that museum feel, are you doing it for you and your wife? Is it what you want, or do you think of it in a larger context than that?
Being, aspiring to being a great collector, the way I put it, is collecting is a sort of minor, a secondary art. I mean, primary art, of course, is the material that we're discussing. But there can be an art to applying your consciousness to the process of collecting, which results in a collection that is distinctive, that has its own personality, that has its own vision, even as the great collections through history, including the collection at the Clark, have had. And so that's what you're going for, you know. Now, when you're a museum, even a middle-sized museum, let alone a large museum, is very often in the business of filling in all the different points on the timeline of whatever area we're talking about. We need a representation of this style of sculpture that was popular in Venice between 1500 and 1520. We're going to search for that. And so you're looking at the collection and you're saying, what don't I have that tells the overall story? So that's a big public collection. A private collection, you don't have to do that at all. I'm interested in 19th century French painting. I'm only interested in a few of the painters. I'm interested in seeing lots of the painters, but in terms of collecting, there's only three or four who really matter to me. For example, we have countless paintings by Gustave Courbet, and they're fantastic. He was fantastic, and the pictures we happen to have are fantastic. And they're in every room of the house because we love them. There are other painters, great painters from that same period in time, that a dealer will say to you, hey, you know, before you buy your 12th painting by Courbet, shouldn't you look at this painting by Daubigny, wonderful painter from that same period? The answer is, much as I like Daubigny, is that I'd rather buy my 30th Courbet than my first Daubigny. And as a private collector, I'm free to do that. And so your collection winds up having certain emphasis that is personal to you. Another example, Italian painting. I love Italian painting. My favorite form of Italian painting is Venetian painting from the 16th century. Who does that entail? Titian, Tintoretto, Bassano, maybe 7, 8 others that you could put in, you know, I mean, obviously Bellini, Giorgione. There's a queer hierarchy that's developed over the centuries. Okay, well, now you're dealing in an area where you can dream, you know, because you have your imaginary, I know what I want here, and you can have harsh reality of what is available, and I do work on a budget. My favorite of all the Venetian painters is Tintoretto. What do I have? I have 4 paintings by Tintoretto, and they're fantastic paintings of the highest quality. From a collecting point of view, putting together 500 years after they were done, 4 fantastic pictures, each in fantastic condition, that's sort of a collector's moment.
Let's focus on that for a moment, because it's your moment, and as you say, when there's what you want and there's what is available. So when say, a Tintoretto or a Courbet become available? And assuming that there are other people out there that want that too.
That's right.
What is that like for you? And is that when the budgeting comes in of there has to be an end point of saying, okay, this is where it would have to end? Because that has to get emotional too.
Well, of course you get emotional. The whole thing becomes deeply emotional. What you do as a collector, you know, collecting is a social universe, a informal conglomeration of collectors, dealers, museum people, curators, art historians, and we're all coming at this material from different angles as their role in the process differs. And what you need to have in this area, and everybody has this, you need a support team. You need some people of the highest caliber who take an interest in your collection and who can be a sounding board, provide advice, can help you from making mistakes. That's one component. The other component is that in working with dealers and in the world of Old Master, you know, dealers are often a target of criticism, and people love the story about how so-and-so, you know, sold so-and-so a copy of something and it wound up in court, and we have some things like that basically always going on. Yeah. The reality is that most dealers in the field of Old Master art are extraordinarily knowledgeable. They have to be. This is not a field that people go into for financial purposes. If you want to do that, you go into contemporary art. Old Master art is a relatively small market, a bunch of happy warriors stumbling over each other all the time. What do I want? Well, what I want is when that Courbet comes along to a dealer, the dealer has a list of names. He has a list of names of clients. Custom is, you know, a dealer, when he gets a special picture, you offer it to one person at a time. You don't call three people at the same, because then you're going to wind up in an awkward situation. So what would I like to be? I would like to be the first call.
Sure.
Because certain pictures come in, and that dealer is going to get not farther than their third call. One of the first three people that he offers it to, if it's a masterpiece, is going to buy it. Part of spending 35 years doing this is building up the relationships where the mutual support and interest can play a role, and a valuable role. You know, when the great picture comes up, most of the time, not all the time, most of the time, it's not going to last very long. It's not going to be out there very long.
Right.
Another talent you have to cultivate is the ability to act quickly. One of the things a private collector has, one of the few things compared to a museum, is that museums have processes where pictures are evaluated carefully, thoroughly. There are boards and sub-boards and funding mechanisms. And there's a whole process that the work will go through, which is time-consuming. I, on the other hand, as well as many of my fellow collectors, I know how to be decisive when that's what's required. And so from the point of view of a dealer, I'm easier to deal with because...
You're ready to go.
Yes, no.
Right.
Right? The museum is the first tier of people say yes. We want to propose it to the next tier of people who say yes. And then you still got another tier. Then comes a question of how are they going to pay for it. I've often said to dealers, give me 24 hours. Just put this away for 24 hours. And I have my best conservator look at it. I have a relevant historian, authority, look at it. assuming they confirm my enthusiasm, I go ahead. I have confidence in my own judgment. On the other hand, if they give me a red light, that might be the end of it.
I'm curious about, in that discussion about the private versus the public collection.
Right.
For you, you have work, we've just been talking about items that go back to the 15th, 16th century. So these have been around for a very, very long time, and I assume part of the mission is to make sure that they're around for many, many centuries in the future. How do you see the future of your collection? That has to be a great concern as well.
It is. My wife and I haven't answered all those questions yet, and probably we're not quite ready to do that. The appeal of keeping the collection together, or key pieces of it together, is great. Remember, though, this is a dynamic collection, which means I not only add to it, but I subtract from it. So it's at the time that I'm ready to donate it or distribute it to museums, you know, that's when I actually know what we're talking about. The key point is, and it's corny to say, but when you are dealing with this material, you're a custodian. You're a temporary custodian. This stuff is going from me, my collection, one way or another. It is going to continue to live. Maybe it's a painting that at a certain point in time I feel, for family reasons, it makes sense for me to sell it. Okay, so then it goes to another very sophisticated collector. And eventually, it will most likely wind its way to a museum. The beauty of the museum is that the conservation and study of the work, you know, is going to continue. That's what a museum is about. A museum is really for the study of the preservation of, the conservation of the objects that it has. Most of them are very, very serious about it and very good. But life being temporary, collecting is temporary as well, unfortunately. And so many issues that come off of that. I'll have to get back to you about, you know, 10 or 20 years from now, I hope. So I guess I'm going to talk more about this at this event. And if I haven't already said everything I have to say, I'll work on some new stuff.
Well, the event is Collecting an Afternoon with John Landau. And just out of curiosity, I mean, I mentioned, of course, the managing of Bruce Springsteen. So which do you consider the day job?
Well, my job, my work, is my 40-year-old collaboration with Bruce. And collecting is collecting. It's its own category. Hobby is to diminish it, you know, in a way, but it fills that place in my life between the wonderful family that I'm blessed with, extraordinary work I've been able to do, and that other interest, that other involvement that sort of helps complete the picture, you know, and adds breadth and depth to a life.
The event is Collecting an Afternoon with John Landau. It takes place this Saturday from 3 to 4:30 at The Clark in Williamstown, Massachusetts. You can find out more by going to clarkart.edu. Clarkart.edu. It's Saturday from 3 to 4:30. John Landau, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. We look forward to having you in the region.
Hey, thank you. I enjoyed it a lot.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, John Landau will be the centerpiece of Collecting, an Afternoon with John Landau, in discussion with art dealer Andrew Butterfield and former Clark senior curator Richard Rand. It is at The Clark on Saturday at 3 to 4:30, clarkart.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.